from the Red Belly Radio Archive Department. You're listening to Red Belly Radio. Hello, and thank you for listening to Red Belly Radio. My name is Steve Heiser. Now, there's been a lot going on lately, and I have some great shows lined up, including an interview with celebrity chef Wolfgang Puck. Yes, he flies on Southwest Airlines. And I recently got to attend the American Idol Experience Gala at the Disney Hollywood Studios in Orlando. Call me a 13-year-old girl. I don't care. I love that show, and I caught some great interviews. And we have a wonderful contest coming up in the near future. As I've mentioned before on this podcast, it used to only be for the employees of Southwest Airlines. And from time to time, I will be pulling from the archives and replaying shows. The show was released in August of 2007, and I wanted to replay this episode as part of Black History Month, but also because I just don't think this group can get enough recognition. I'm talking about the Tuskegee Airmen and those involved with the Tuskegee Aviation Experiment. So, here you go. The Tuskegee Airmen is the popular name for a group of almost 1,000 African-American pilots who flew during World War II as the 332nd Fighter Group of the U.S. Army Air Corps. Prior to the Tuskegee Airmen, no U.S. military pilots had been of African descent. For 36 years, the Airmen have held an annual convention, and this year, the meeting was held in Dallas. Southwest Airlines marked the event with a plane dedication at the Frontiers of Flight Museum at Love Field. Earlier this year, about 350 of the Tuskegee Airmen and their widows were awarded the Congressional Gold Medal for their efforts during World War II. This award is usually given to individuals and marks only the second time it has been awarded to a group, the first being a group of American Indians who helped with the encoding and decoding of messages during World War II. Local ABC anchorman John McKay emceed the ceremony and invited Herb, along with Southwest Airlines Chicago chief pilot Captain Lou Freeman, and retired Lieutenant Colonel Robert Ashby, an original Tuskegee Airman and the first African-American commercial pilot to unveil the logo.
We're excited to have you be the first to see the airplane decal honoring the Tuskegee Airmen. Now please join me as Southwest Airlines salutes the Tuskegee Airmen and we give history a future. Herb, Lou, Robert, please do us the honor of unveiling the decal.
The logo includes a star in a circle and the line of three planes flying in front of a cloud. Text around it reads, Southwest Airlines salutes the Tuskegee Airmen, giving history a future. The art is positioned below the cockpit windows on both sides of the aircraft and will remain there for 1 year. After the unveiling, I met up with Herb and he had this to say.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm just again thrilled to be with the Tuskegee Airmen, who did a fabulous job for our country during World War II. And were not properly recognized at that time for their achievements and their accomplishments on behalf of our nation. But Southwest Airlines in particular, and many people in addition, have been trying to make up for that slight. And those guys are my double heroes, as I said, because they had to fight on two fronts. They had to fight against discrimination, and they had to fight against oppression abroad at the same time. And they did it with heroism, they did it with honor, they did it with grace, and I think they're one of the most fabulous groups of people that I have ever met.
Well, I like the story that the Allied bombers, even though they didn't know they were of color, they would request their help when they would go on a bombing.
Oh, absolutely.
Mission.
Isn't that spectacular? And isn't that a tribute to their superior qualities as warfighters?
I spoke with historian and one of the original Tuskegee Airmen, Leroy Gilead, about how the Airmen came about.
I'm one of the 401 original pre-Pearl Harbor Tuskegee Airmen of the 99th Pursuit Squadron, later the 99th Fighter Squadron, of the United States Black Air Force, Chanute Field, Rantoul, Illinois, spring of 1941. No one has more seniority to Tuskegee Airmen than the 401 of us before Pearl Harbor, not even our commander, General Davis, who's at West Point. He came in the summer. We were in the spring. And there were no black pilots at that time. It was more than a year later before the first black pilot came into the Tuskegee Aviation Experiment. The experiment of blacks in the Army Air Corps started in 1939 under the mobilization plans. And Congress with then-Senator Truman and some from the First Lady, Mrs. Roosevelt, okay, because of two blacks who flew from Chicago to Washington to encourage greater participation by blacks in aviation. And Truman said, well, if they could fly from Chicago to here, they should have equal opportunity in flying in the military. And that was in April of 1939 when the first mobilization plan came out for the expansion of the Air Corps.
The commander that Leroy spoke of was Captain Benjamin Davis, Jr., one of the few African-American West Point graduates at the time. Incidentally, his father, Benjamin Davis, Sr., was the first black general in the U.S. Army. A series of legislative moves by the United States Congress in 1941 forced the Army Air Corps to form an all-black combat unit, much to the War Department's chagrin. In an effort to eliminate the unit before it could even begin, the War Department set up a system to accept only candidates with a level of flight experience or higher education that they expected would be hard to fill. This policy backfired, however, when the Air Corps received numerous applications from men who were more than qualified even under these restrictions.
As an enlisted person, when I enlisted, we had to have an AGT score that would become an officer. And that's why we were so successful. We had a much higher level of educated blacks, college degrees, some non-college degree, everybody a high school or better, and some even with masters, and a couple who had PhDs. You got to go back and recognize that from an economic point of view, blacks even at that time at $30-something dollars a month made more money than a lot of blacks around. So that was one of the incentives to enlist.
Eventually, the airmen of the 332nd Fighter Group escorted bombing raids into Austria, Hungary, Poland, and Germany. The Tuskegee Airmen racked up an impressive combat record. Reportedly, the Luftwaffe awarded the airmen the nickname Schwarze Vogelmenschen, or Black Birdmen. The Allies simply called the airmen Red Tails or Red Tail Angels because of the distinctive crimson paint on the vertical stabilizers of their unit's aircraft. Due to their fantastic track record, Allied bomber groups would often request Red Tail escort when possible. Ironically, due to segregation, few of the bomber crew members even knew at the time that the airmen were black. The war for these men was not only fought overseas, but right here at home, too. Again, Leroy Gilead.
The thing that's most people are not aware of, that the Tuskegee Airmen consists of a fighter group and a bomber group, and you only hear about the fighter group. And of the fighter group, you hear only of the 450 combat pilots. Now, people are not aware that the Tuskegee Aviation Experiment ran from 1939 to 1949, consisted of approximately 15,000 people, men and women, black and white, military and civilian. And of that, less than 3% were fighter combat pilots, and that's all you hear about. The bomber group are not known, but when the president and the presentation of the Congressional Gold Medal talked about the fighters winning a war overseas and talked about the Tuskegee Airmen winning a war stateside, he did not delineate what they did. But one of the primary things they did was to fight the racial segregation and discrimination of the black airmen at Freeman Field, Seymour, Indiana, in April of 1945, where they refused to further segregate themselves by signing a document, base regular 85-4, to further segregate themselves. And because of that, 101 officers were incarcerated for a week and shipped from Freeman Field and incarcerated at Fort Knox, Kentucky. And that began the realization of getting rid of the discriminating and racist whites, and we were replaced by General Davis, members of his fighter group, and members of the bomber group. Now, that is not normally known. And that's where, when we speak about at home and at war, that's when, and there are other things that had happened throughout the armed services, but that was one of the major things that encouraged Truman to promulgate the executive order to integrate the services.
It had long been said that the Red Tails were the only fighter group who never lost a bomber to enemy fighters. Suggestions to the contrary have risen. The claim that no bomber escorted by the Tuskegee Airmen had ever been lost to enemy fire first appeared on March 24, 1945, from an article published in the Chicago Defender under the headline, 332nd Flies Its 200th Mission Without Loss. Ironically, this article was published on the very day that, according to a March 2007 Air Force report, some bombers under the 332nd Fighter Group Escort Protection were shot down. Again, Leroy Gilead.
So if you say the Tuskegee Airmen never lost an escorted bomber to the enemy in over 200 missions, that's almost unbelievable. And then you recognize, well, what did the white guys do? And they asked for the blacks to escort them. So you have to see, well, out of 200, maybe there was some that just didn't come up, all right? So let us say out of 200 that they actually was, if they could prove it, it's 180. Would that make any difference to the record? There's not one white group that can say 100.
It's that huge of a difference.
That's right.
A subsequent report based on after-mission reports filed by both bomber units and the Tuskegee fighter groups, as well as missing aircrew records and witness testimony, was released in March 2007. It documented 25 bombers shot down by enemy aircraft while being escorted by the Tuskegee Airmen. Still a very impressive record for a group that some never wanted to see get off the ground. After talking with Mr. Gilead, I wondered about the quality of the equipment that the airmen were given to train with.
Now, when you first started out in your training, did you suffer with inferior equipment?
Oh, no. We made out better than probably most white because we were segregated, isolated, and insulated. So give them the best because they don't have to complain and ask for anything. See, that's the subtlety involved. So we made out. We got everything. We had no problem at all.
Well, Leroy, thank you so much for talking with me. Thank you so much for your service to our nation.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate you giving me this opportunity.
In all, 992 pilots were trained in Tuskegee from 1940 to 1946. About 445 deployed overseas, and 150 airmen lost their lives in training or combat. Almost all of them were forced to return to ground-based jobs due to racist hiring practices of the time. Their efforts, however, are appreciated by younger people with dreams of flying. Southwest Airlines Chicago chief pilot Captain Lou Freeman.
They were the first of their kind, and they made it possible for the guys like me to come along. If they hadn't set such a high standard, it would have been a lot tougher for us. The good thing is I've had the opportunity over the years to get the chance to know a bunch of them, not all of them for sure. And every time one of them passes away, it really kind of it hurts big time. I'm just sad that only one of them got a chance to be an airline pilot because they all had super skills. And only Bob Ashby, the guy that was up there on the stage with us, he was a captain for Frontier. And none of the rest of them were offered airline positions because of the racism at the time. But they're not bitter. They're happy. If you talk to them, they're excited a bunch, and they're excited for those of us that got a chance to live our dreams. He was the first African-American commercial pilot, but he was the only original airman that got a chance to be a airline pilot. He retired from the Air Force. He went to work for United as a sim instructor, and then he was able to get a job with Frontier as a pilot. So he was later in his years before he actually started flying. He was, I think, like 50 or 51 before he ever got an airline job.
Robert Ashby retired from the Air Force in 1965 and applied to every major airline to fly 727s. United Airlines hired him as an instructor of low-level pilots to help transition from propeller-driven planes to jets. In 1973, Denver-based Frontier Airlines gave him the call, making him the first African-American pilot to be hired by a commercial airline. If you have any comments about this or any episode of Red Belly Radio, you can email me at redbellyradio, that's all one word, at wnco.com. That's WN like Nancy, co.com. Well, that does it for this episode. Red Belly Radio is a trademark of the Southwest Airlines Company. This episode is copyrighted 2009. The captain has indicated that we have come to the conclusion of this podcast. Please turn off and stow all portable electronic devices.